Welcome, everybody. My name is Mark Miller. I am Chief Scientist at DevExpress, and we're going to talk about the science of great UI today. I'm glad you're all here. This is, in my opinion, a very important topic. One of the things that I love about this topic is that a lot of you will come in here and with an amount of knowledge of how to determine good UI versus bad UI, and that knowledge will be such where you'll come away saying, well, I'm not really sure, or you'll start out saying, I'm not really sure how to tell the difference between good UI and bad UI. And at the end, you'll be able to look at good UI and bad UI and be able to tell the difference. I think you'll have a much stronger sense of how to how to communicate with your designers, how to communicate with other developers on your team, and how to communicate effectively and say, this is good, this is bad, and this is what we need to do to change, and this is why we need to change. So I think the real tangible benefits, get a sense of the difference between, you know, your knowledge now and in about 73 minutes from now, and we'll bring up something and we'll get a sense of the progress you've made. This is also important because of your customers, right? If you make your customers happy, efficient, productive, satisfied, that will mean more money in your pocket, more money in your company's pocket, right? So that's part of what we're doing here. I've heard developers say these four things. UI is subjective, meaning it's impossible to determine if UI is good or bad. There's no way. It's all subjective. It depends on each person. I'm not an artist. Which means, you know, we're going to let somebody else do this, or this is the best I've done, but I'm not an artist. Again, kind of connected to some degree to the first one, right? If you're not an artist, there's some way inherently spoken in there the idea that it's subjective again, right? We can't decide, you know, what makes an artist, what doesn't make an artist. We can't fix the UI. Right? The UI is just something that is the way it is, and we just can't fix it. There's no way to make it better. And then good UI is not worth the effort. So these are all things I've heard developers say, which I think take us farther away, not closer, to having good UI. And we'll look at all four of these. So, the first one, UI is subjective. Well, I contend it is not subjective at all. It's essentially, we're talking about the cost of interaction, and that it can be measured. For example, there's a physical interaction when you're working with a keyboard. There's the number of keystrokes you're pressing, right? Even to some degree, a degree of precision involved in pressing a key. So some keys are very big, like the space bar, and some are small. So the space bar is something that requires a small degree of precision, whereas like a brace in C# requires a high degree of precision, right? Shift key, hit the brace, release your shift key, right? So there's a varying amount of precision required. With mice, it's the travel distance and the clicks, finger travel distance and taps if you're working in a pad device. Even things like gaze shift, right? If I'm looking down, I'm on a large monitor, I'm looking at the bottom right, and I have to move my eyes to the upper left and then back down, and I have to do this for the UI. Moving in this direction is painful if I have to do a lot of this, right? 12 hours a day of that is much more expensive than 12 hours a day of this, right? Smaller distance moving left and right. Okay, so there's gaze shift, also voice, that sort of thing, right? Whatever that input is, we're talking about physical input for connecting with the computer, we're talking about minimizing that. By the way, tonight I'll be doing a session on called Stepping into the Near Future of the IDE, and one of the things that's cool about that session is we'll talk about mind control. So essentially thinking, but without physical motion. So kind of cool. And then also there's mental interaction on this slide right here, the time effort to understand new information, recall the rules of engagement, and also to find signal among noise, right? So it's what's going on in your mind. So it's your body and your mind. And the goal is to minimize both of those. And from the standpoint of subjectivity, if we can measure these, right, then all of a sudden UI doesn't become subjective anymore, right? We can simply say, for example, this took 15 keystrokes to accomplish this task, and with our new proposed interface, it's going to take 5. Okay, so here's our savings. And the last piece I have down here is the emotional state of the user. So that's just also a reflection of how productive they are. If they're very productive, they tend to be happy, and if they're going slowly, they tend to be upset. So keystrokes, I talked a little bit about this, and One of the things that's interesting about keystrokes is as you increase the complexity of the application, you tend to also increase the number of shortcuts that are shipping with that. And with that application. And the problem with that is that it increases the burden on the user. There's also discoverability aspects of it as well. What keys do I press, right, to get this particular feature? And it increases the learning curve and distracts from the task at hand. And it's complex. And here's an example from a screenshot from Visual Studio 2005 when they introduced refactoring features. And notice these three right here, refactorings, all start with the letter R. And so when I'm going to memorize the keystrokes for this, for example, for remove parameters, I will, in my head, create a mnemonic, an audio mnemonic in my head. I'll say remove parameters is control RV. And then reorder parameters is reorder parameters. And what am I doing? I'm working around, I'm creating a workaround in my head to get around the UI so that I can remember the shortcuts, right? You've probably done tricks like this in the past, right? I think as developers, we're really good at adapting to software that's not good at adapting to us, right? And I think that's one of the things we're good at. So so there are problems. These problems can also lead to, like I said, to discoverability issues where it's hard to discover all the shortcuts. So one way around that is to print out cheat sheets. Right, here's some screenshots of some cheat sheets for showing you all the shortcuts that you can press. Right, that's a way to get around discoverability. Document it. Okay, but we'll talk about later ways to combat this. But that's one of the things that's interesting about keystrokes. Also, with regards to mouse, you travel distance. You can measure it in pixels and in clicks, things like that. In general, you want to minimize the mouse travel distance. The cool thing about this is that we can measure UI. Right, you can measure it easily by counting keystrokes, by measuring the amount of the distance the mouse has moved, and the value of measurement is not to just come up and say, well, this is the value, this is the number on my application, but the value of it is for comparing and deciding between one choice and another, right? Which way do we go, and how much can we save? I'm going to skip this example for time, and because I think we have more interesting examples coming later on. The last piece right here, the last thing that I contend that you can measure is the brain power required to run the UI, and you can measure this by time, by taking measuring how long it takes for the task to be accomplished, and I think also to some degree, you know, measuring the time when nothing is happening along that path. So we have to go from start to finish to accomplish a task, and in there we have nothing happening because the user's not sure what to do next. And I've listed some brain suckers here, things that I think will things that take away from the consumer having the user having a good time with your application. Awkward key combinations, distractions that they make themselves. Right, you misspell something, you have to go back and correct it. That sort of thing. Searching for functionality, going to the help or the documentation. Tedium noise, stacked UIs. So stacked UIs are UIs that block the pieces behind it by stacking up more UI on top of it. If you've ever had to take a dialogue and move it off to the side to see something underneath, how many people have done that? Oh, that's surprising. Everybody, it's 100%. And or cancel a dialogue to go get to something underneath. How many people have done that? Hit cancel just to bring it back up again. Okay, about 100% again. So there's an example, right, of stacked UIs, right? Things that are kind of getting in the way. And what happens is the UI itself is getting in the way of accomplishing the task. Right, and what we want to do is flatten that, so instead of stacking things up, we just kind of put things next to each other where everything is accessible. That's the goal, at least. Orienteering costs. So, you know, we're talking about questions again. You know, I love asking this question because it's almost an obscure question. But I'll give you the context, and then I'll ask you the question. So the context is we're on a website, we're browsing. We happen to be on a page that's really long. There's a lot of information on this page. Right, and we're scrolling down. We're scrolling down, scanning, or maybe searching for information, and maybe we're hitting a couple of spots, and finally we find an important piece of information. But we need to go away from here and come back. We need to scroll somewhere else and come back. So that's the problem. So how many people in this situation look to the right, see the position of the scroll bar, and remember it? Okay, it looks at least 80% of you have raised your hands. Okay. So I contend that this is a sign that the scroll bar is deficient. It's essentially a technology that's well over, I'd say, 15 years old, right? And it hasn't changed in the last 10 years or so. The last significant change was to make the thumb represent how much of the screen you're viewing, the size of the thumb. But it's old technology for navigation, right? A lot of people think it's sufficient because it's all we know, right? But I guarantee you, somebody from the future would look at it and say, okay, that is crazy. I can't believe you're crawling so slowly and navigating so slowly, right? So orienteering costs, the cost of navigating through large amounts of data. And my guess is that probably, in fact, I'll ask you, how many folks out here, as part of the applications you build, allow your customers to wade through a lot of data, like thousands of records, thousands or more pieces of information? Okay, so at least like 10% of, I was expecting a much bigger number there, but orienteering costs. So, right, how do we get the customer through the data and get them through that data and coming back? Okay, and then variance from the user model. So what's the user model? Well, it's what the user expects. And often, you know, as we have users coming in from the physical world into the virtual world, there's a corresponding object in the physical world. Like, for example, a checkbook. And sometimes computer history is convention. For example, here, if I want to save my document, I click on this shape right here. But what is that thing? Nobody knows what that is, apparently. All right. So when you suck on your customers' brains, you reduce their ability to focus, you decrease their productivity, you increase their stress and tension, and you provoke a negative emotional response. It's like that video that came out, one of the first viral videos, I think, on the internet, was the guy that was in his cubicle. He was all angry with his computer, so he picks up the monitor and throws it down, right? What do you want to bet that was not a software problem, right? Or not a hardware problem, I mean. Yeah, there we go. I'll tell the joke correctly, and then we'll get more laughs. What do you want to bet it was not a hardware problem, right? It's not. It was a software problem, right? People don't destroy computers over hardware problems. It's only software. Software has the potential to really get, you know, irritate people. So you can measure interaction with physical and mental effort. All right? Any questions on that? Okay. Let's get more exciting. I'm not an artist. I think you're going to like this section because this section is going to teach you how to look like an artist, how to fake it, right? You're going to be able to do things that approximate what an artist does, right? Without having to... I'm giving you like a 4-year college course in the next 15 minutes. It's awesome. I'm actually handing out degrees in this course. I'll give you the degrees. So we're going to talk about presenting information with clarity. And in that, there's 4 sections, right? Smallest effective difference, information in parallel, noise, and tools of the UI masters. In that last section, what we're going to do is we're going to talk about the different tools and decisions you can make with regards to choices for color, contrast, things like that. So the first two in this, by the way, are coming from our ideas from Edward Tufte, who is a genius. And I strongly recommend this book. And then my last slide has this ISBN number on it as well. So you can write that down later if you don't get it here. But it is an excellent book, Visual Explanations, Images and Quantities, Evidence and Narrative. One of the topics that Tufte brings up is smallest effective difference. And you can see on the left I've got a high contrast letter S, and on the right I have a low contrast letter S. And the essence behind this is why use something high contrast when low contrast will work. The smallest effective difference. Okay? So I want to send that to my mom because she sends me these ransom notes from time to time that she fakes like she's being, you know, kidnapped. And she sends big block cutout letters in those. And I want to say, Mom, you just need the smallest effective difference, right? You don't need to scare me with, you know, all of that stuff. And I know you're not being kidnapped for real. So I don't know why I bring up the personal issues. I should stick to those to my therapist, right? So smallest effective difference. Don't overdo it. Tufte says use the smallest effective difference, but Tufte is a graphics designer. He deals with print. And with computer monitors and LCD displays, sometimes the quality is not as good. For example, on a projector, the ability to show small variations in contrast is limited. So I say crank up the contrast a bit because of the quality issues and test on a lowest quality display you can find, like, you know, one of the older laptops. This is the second idea from Tufte, information in parallel. Well, before I can talk about information in parallel, let's first discuss information in serial. It's evaluated over time. User connects new information with memory of old information. Okay? Let's contrast that with this, and I'll let you read this slide yourself. Now, what's cool about this is that, one, you're able to control the pacing of the information. You can go left and you can go right with your eyes. You can scan left and right, right? It's very, very cool, right? So information in parallel is more effective than information in serial, right? So that's the other idea from Tufte. That's why we talk about, you know, stacking the UIs. That's why I'm saying, you know, flatten them down. By the way, in the lower left, you see an icon of a brain. When you see that show up, that means I want you to be aware of what's going on in your head as you're watching the slides, right? What are you thinking as you're seeing this? Okay. So noise. So noise erodes productivity, hides important details, and your job is to work to identify and suppress it. And here's an example. Back in 2003, I installed Office. And I got an email from a friend, and the friend asked me, hey, I've got a Microsoft Publisher document. Can you open that up? And I said, well, let me check. I'll just go check. So I move into all programs, Microsoft Office, and I come down and I look for publisher. And I realize that, okay, I've got, you know, everything starting with Microsoft. So I said, okay, I'll go to the end. And then I move down to the end, and I go, publisher. Ah, they're being tricky. Okay, let's go to the middle. Look for the letter P. There it is right there. Oh, PowerPoint. Publisher, I have it. Remember that icon. So that's what I did. And before responding, I went into my start menu and I made some changes. First, I changed from Microsoft Office to Office because I don't have Scooby-Doo Office. I just have Office. Secondly, I took out Microsoft at the beginning and 2003 out for the end. And now if I want to find Publisher, it's instant. Here's an example of noise and clarity, side by side. By the way, you'll see a number of examples in here side by side. That's information in parallel, right? Instead of showing you one slide and then the next, having you remember, I'm showing them side by side. You can instantly assimilate. Okay? I was working with my son a few years ago. He was sitting on my lap, and we've got some software from Lego. And my apologies to the cameraman. I'm about to move here, so we can move over and point. So this dialogue comes up, and you know I'm a little crazy, so I take my son. I say, "Sorry, son, Dad's got to go to work." I take him off my lap, and I take a screenshot. Couple things going on here. One, we've got a lot of text, right? What do we do when we see a lot of text? We click I agree. That's what we do. If it's important, why is it black on gray? It's kind of hard to read, right? It's one of the problems. Secondly, we've got some other problems that are just fun to talk about. These two things here that look like buttons, click this and click this, they're not buttons. They're just pictures of this piece right here. Perhaps the scariest piece of this interaction right here is down here. It says, click here if you don't want to see this tip again. I clicked here for like a good minute before I realized that that was not doing anything. It was merely a screenshot of this right up here. All right. That was frustrating. So noise. Here's another example of noise. The question is, where's the signal? Again, I'm driving with my family. I see the signs. I say, whoa, stop. I'm getting out for a picture. Right? Check this out. I have, and look at what's going on here. You know, I got the icon for the brain here. So think about what's going on in your brain. My question is, where's the signal? Where's the important piece of information? It's right down here. Bridge out. That's it right there. That's signal, right? So what's going on here? The more words we throw at people, right, the less they're likely to pay attention and actually read them. We want as few words as possible. Bridge out. It's beautiful, eloquent, right? I should have put the parking brake on when I got out of the car because my family was, you know, rolling along while I was taking pictures and I had to go run after them. There they are right there in the background fading away from me. I'm making this up. They're okay. Everybody's all right. So, all right, tools of the UI masters. Here they are: contrast, size, color, motion, shape, opacity, shadow, gradient, and proximity. Okay? These are the key things. But the cool thing is the rules are simple. So contrast. Our eyes are attracted to the greatest contrast, right? Contrast, here's the key piece right here. Contrast should fit information relevance. Okay? What is the relevance of the information? Well, information, what's information? From my perspective, there are two things on screen at all times. It's either information or noise. Okay? So that means if it is, and in general, I find that even things like lines, I call that information. I don't call that noise. What I call noise are things that are not what I want to see, that are distracting me from the things I do. So, as an example, let's go over into Word, and let's insert a new table. And we'll come in here, create a table, and here's my awesome important data inside of it. So we'll just do this, put some data in here. Now, so inside of this UI, if we look at just the table itself, right? We don't look anywhere else. Here, I'll maximize this. Just your eyes are in here on the table itself. Notice that the color for the text, black, is identical to the color for the lines, okay, between the table. However, my contention is that the lines are not as important in terms of information as the data itself. Okay? So I'm calling this a mistake. However, if we go over into Excel and we do this, let's actually go to this one. Can we see it? Yeah. These are great monitors. So or great projection displays. So I was in India last week, and when I brought this up, it was all white. Nobody could see the lines. So at any rate, there we've got these lines going across here, and so the same thing is essentially shown, right? I have data, and I have lines, but here the contrast on the lines is lower than that of the data, okay? So what's important? What's relevant? I want to point out, though, it's kind of interesting to point out, if you look at Word, up here, they totally follow this, right? I've got, you know, some subtle lines here, right? It's not dark black lines, they're subtle. It's just that when I want to create a table with Word, they kind of make me do it in a way that is not really following it, right? So, all right, so that's Word, and let's go back to this piece. So contrast should fit information relevance. This is one of the most important rules of this session, right? You want people to be able to see the things that are important, and the things that are not as important, they can see it, but it shouldn't be attracting and fighting for their eyes' attention, okay? Color. So here are some color screenshots that I like. One is for an iTunes installer. Another one is for inserting smart graphics from PowerPoint. One of the things I like about both of these is they are both rendered with one hue, with the exception of this progress bar. This is all in one hue, and this is all in one hue, just using variances on saturation and lightness. And they both look great. If you imagine these in multiple colors, it would probably not look as good. There'd be the colors themselves, having multiple colors, would actually increase noise, right? Fighting for your eyes' attention, not sure what to look at. Speaking of color, let's talk about colorblind users. So here we have a table that shows men and women and the different how they break down into normal vision and then the different kinds of defects that you can have that create colorblindness. So notice that colorblindness impacts overall about 5% of the population, but almost 10% of men, right? At least not, or you could say almost 9% or 8.6% of men, right? A significant percentage of men are colorblind. And the other thing that's interesting is here's what they look like. If you have normal vision, this slide will show you what it looks like, what these colors, red, orange, yellow, green, blue, and magenta, look like for people with the different defects. What's interesting about this, notice that red and green are hard to differentiate if you've got an M-cone defect or an L-cone defect. Okay. However, notice that red and blue are easy to differentiate regardless of what the defect is. The takeaway is use red and blue to differentiate if you're going to use color to differentiate, not red and green, which is what everybody uses, right? Everybody uses red and green to differentiate if they're going to use color to differentiate. Use red and blue instead. Another tip for working with color, I suggest using HSL, hue, saturation, and lightness, instead of RGB. It's just easier to adjust hue, saturation, and lightness using those, right? So it gives you one particular hue you start with, and then you get all those variations like we saw in this screenshot right here. So you can get all of those. Work with a limited palette is my last suggestion on here for working with color. Don't have a whole bunch of colors. Use a small number of colors. And I think people will find that more satisfying because, again, we're going to use color only to emphasize, and otherwise we will not overuse it. Color palettes. At Kuehler.adobe.com, I think I have this up in one of my slides. Here we are. There's kind of a neat thing here for creating color palettes if you're, you know, want to try something. So it's out there. You can choose different color palettes like this. Although I would probably recommend monochromatic and then maybe picking one or two complementary pieces to go with that. That's what I would do. So you can play with this, and you can also see what the community has put out as well. So anyway, that's out there. So also I suggest using color or using saturation like contrast, so relevant information can have a higher saturation, like a brighter color. Size. So like contrast, more relevant data can be larger. Okay, and more frequently hit controls can be larger as well. So it kind of impacts both reading, you know, from a standpoint of consuming information, and also interaction, right? So like if I'm designing an order form page, I want my order button to be giant and my cancel button to be small, right? The other way around is not going to work for me, right? I want more precision required to go in the wrong direction and less precision to be required in the forward direction. Right. Also, from the same, the other example I like on this, or here, let's go to the next one here, which is really cool. Notice, by the way, there's an icon down the bottom, the brain icon. So you can combine large size with low contrast to track the eye and let it move on. As an example, this slide itself is an example. Right. I have the word size. It's big, but it's low contrast. Right. So your eyes go to it first if you haven't seen it, but once you've seen this, you know what it says, and you're not fighting this high contrast size up in the upper, that's fighting for your attention. What I like to do is I like to use this technique on tables. So on the table, I'll have the header bold but low contrast. Okay? Bold but low contrast. So if I'm curious to know what it is, my eyes will go up there and can see it. Or if I'm seeing it for the first time because it's big, it's bolded, my eyes will go to that. But once I see it, I don't need it to be as high contrast as the data itself. It's just fighting for my attention. Okay? Precision. Let's see if I have a demo of this. Let's see what I want to bring up here. So this is Windows Explorer. And if I want to change this slider, I have 2 pixels in which to do it. Right there. So that's an example of precision. What I would like, and I've actually, I've talked to our devs about this because we actually make controls, and I said, you know what I would like, guys? I would like something that when I'm moving over it, it gets bigger so I can click and drag on it so it's easier. And then when I, move away, like if I move and just hold, I just want it to get bigger for me. Give me a bigger target. But then if I move away, shrink it down because I don't want a big fat thing in the middle of my screen. So that's an example of precision. And so you definitely want to give, because if you've ever done this, right, going back and forth, right, there you go, sucks, according to the gentleman in the front. There you go, right. Yeah, it's tough, right? And it's, what am I trying to do? I just want to move it. That's all I want to do, right? In the future, people will say, move it in their heads, and it'll just go, right? And we're living in the Stone Age now as we go back and forth with the mouse, right, trying to get it. People would laugh at us from the future. We don't laugh at ourselves because we don't know how awesome it is in the future. It's awesome in the future. It's so awesome. So precision, okay? Shadow. So this is a UI I created, the one on top. And one of my developers asked, hey, should we put shadow underneath that? And I go, I don't know. Let me try it. I put shadow underneath it. And I was like, oh, yeah, we definitely need shadow. Right? This is something that didn't occur to me even after the question was asked. And so the rule I got from this is, hey, if I have UI that floats on top of other UI, you need shadow underneath it. Even if you've got boxes around it. Because the problem is your eyes are all drawn into this area right here. Right? You're looking at the word animation canvas. You're like looking up there trying to see what the rest of the letters are. Your eye, it's a high degree of conflict, right? And here, you're not doing that because of this shadow. Right? And motion animation. So You know, with WPF, we've got opportunities to do a lot of motion and animation. So the rules here are similar to everything else, right? Smallest effective difference, right? We're not going to have labels that are saying, hey, look at this over here, right? You're not going to do that, right? It's you use motion if you have to. And when's a good time to use motion? If you know the customer's looking up here and you want to move the customer's eyes down here. Just a little subtle thing that says, hey, I'm over here now. Right? For example, a training thing that says, click here. Oh, now go down over here. You could use animation then. Right? You can also animate the appearance and exit, without moving, just simply by adjusting the opacity over time, fading in and fading out. And a lot of things do this. Right? But yeah, the smallest effective difference rules apply. The thing that comes to mind is the little toaster UI pieces that come up down through the bottom, right? How many, you know, out of those that you look at, right, they move up, so your eyes are attracted to the motion, and you read, how many of those are actually genuinely useful to you during the day, right? Zero from the guy who said sucks before, right? I love angry developers. This is awesome, right? Yeah. So, all right. Oh, the other thing that I have up here is acceleration and deceleration are both good. And what I mean by that is you don't want animation that does the robot dance, right? You can save that for Saturday nights at the club. What you want is animation that accelerates and decelerates, right? So it's a natural motion, right? If I move from here to here, I'm going from stop, I'm accelerating, I'm at my max speed, and then I decelerate. And that's what's going on. So if you want to show somebody, you know, a move across screen, I strongly recommend acceleration and deceleration. They look so natural and people aren't going to, you know, freak out. Whereas if you do this, this guy's getting upset, calling his therapist about now, right now, see what's going on. Yeah, so you want to make it natural. Gradient. Gradient is related to shadow. Because it creates a transition that can be subtle. And I love using gradient in the examples that you see here where I am trying to emphasize something on screen, right? Now in Visual Studio, I think I turned this feature off so I can't show it now on my machine, but Visual Studio 2010, when you first install it and you put the caret on an identifier that shows up several places, it'll highlight all those places. But the way it highlights them is with a gray border, a gray background. And the gray background with black text presumably on top of it is harder to read that text than the surrounding pieces. So what your eyes see are the blocks everywhere that it occurs, but it's harder to read that text. What I like to do instead is something like this, where instead of setting like the background color, actually, speaking of which, I talked to the devs about this, and I said, well, why did you pick gray? Right? And they're like, oh, we had so much trouble deciding what color for it to be. And I was like, why didn't you just choose a different way to highlight it? Like, for example, this, you know, pink line like this kind of thing where I've got a soft gradient around the edge. Right? All of these examples here, what's interesting about all these examples is they have a hard edge on one side. Like here, there's a hard edge here and a soft gradient down on the bottom. Here, there's a hard edge on the inside and a soft gradient on the outside. Same thing here. Hard edge, soft gradient. What do? Your eyes go to this hard edge. Right, and it gives you an illusion that the background is brighter than the rest of the document. Right, if you ask me, I'd say, yeah, that looks like 256 RGB values. Right, it's whiter than white, which I have a patent on, by the way. So don't try to take that from me. So it looks brighter than the rest. Your eyes are easily in there. Right, so that is gradient. That's an effective way to use gradient. Proximity. Okay, so I've got a slide up here. We're doing a presentation, and the question is, you know, what's this 14% right here? Well, we have to kind of go down, and if we're not colorblind, we see the green right here, and we can confirm that it's 14% out here, and we're over here. We say, okay, I think it's decline, expedite, cancel, refunds. And then we might say, well, what's the 8%? And then our eyes go back over here. What's happening? We're going left and right and left and right to read the values, right? So this is with a legend, right? Instead of doing a legend, try to stick the data right where it belongs, right? Here now, if we want to know what's in, you know, purple, oh, it's wire transfers. It's right there immediately in front of us. The questions are immediately answered, and I don't have to do any work to get the answer. So with proximity, you want to put relevant pieces of information close to each other. This is true for information you're presenting, and it's also true for controls. That I need to, so if I have a control near that affects something, I should put it close to that something, or should at least consider it, so we don't like move far away, right? I'm not doing this. So the essence of clarity. So I've been doing this presentation for years, and then I had a dream, and I woke up and I added this slide. And the essence of clarity is adjust these according to information relevance. Contrast, size, saturation, and opacity. That's the essence. Okay, and you could throw out opacity because opacity to some degree really impacts contrast. So contrast, size, and saturation. That's the essence. But I'm not saying adjust all three at once. I'm saying, you know, go with something that makes sense. I usually, contrast is the big one that I mess with. That's a big one that I change. Here are some great examples. Clarity. So check this out. Here I have some important data. This is a combo box. And here I have less important data. So this is bright and high contrast. This is lower contrast. Okay. Another great example. I love this so much. So here, if I'm the first time user and I want to know what this does, I read the whole thing. Zoom and crop photos to fill grid cells. Oh, okay. Stroke photo border. Okay. Cast a shadow behind the images. Good. Now, if I'm a power user and I want to find shadow, I just look for the bolded items. Other shadow right there. Click. Right? I like this a lot. The important words are emphasized. These are both from Adobe. Here's another example. So this is from an application that was built for Silicon Valley Code Camp in the United States for browsing sessions. And so this was my session at the time. So what do you think is wrong with this? I'm a cameraman. I'm going to move around. So anybody seeing problems with this? What? Too many colors. It's the first thing that comes out, isn't it? Why do they use these colors? Well, because the Silicon Valley Code Camp had this in their logo. So some helpful developer said, let's make sure we use those, right? So that made sense to the developer. What else do you want to change in this?
The most important thing is dark.
Is the dark? The most important thing is what?
Purple.
Oh, the most important thing is dark and hard to read. Sure. Yeah, you know, right, the whole choice to do this on information, it's almost random. It's almost on a whim, right? And this kind of comes to the whole essence of this session, right? The essence of this session is you are instructed when you go out to not do this, right? Don't do that. Don't make decisions based on a whim. Make every decision with intent. How much contrast should this have? Okay? What else do we have? What else do we have? Anything else that comes to mind? Yeah. Big and bright, but who cares?
Who cares?
We're going to have an angry developer meeting after this. Let's do this. Anybody want to join me? We are going to get angry. What else do you want to do? Any other issues like proximity? Anybody see any issues with proximity? Anything you want to change?
Name and face.
Name, face, right? Who's this guy? I don't know, but this guy's doing the session, right? So let's use information in parallel to give you a comparison of the old plus my revision of it. So here's my revision. Science a great UI. Hey, this is like pretty important information. Let's make it big across the top. Intermediate, not so important. I made it gray. Okay. Time, right? Let's make it big and let's make it white. High contrast. That is important. And you know, who cares what room it is? If you are at this point and you're okay, then you can look and see what the room is. And who cares how many people will attend? No, you know, nobody cares really, right? So it's not as important. It's smaller. And look at that proximity right there. Let's fix that. And that gives us a little more space. We can get more text on screen and make it bigger font, whatever we want to do. Okay? And those are the changes. Session also, the one on top, is now darker. What's exciting about this? I'll tell you what's exciting. It's about 40 minutes ago, if I had shown you this, you'd be like, I don't know, I'm not sure what to do with that. Right? And now you know. You are so much more powerful now, my Padawan learners. Yeah, get your lightsaber. There you go. All right, so summary. Smallest effective difference, information in parallel. Keep noise low, right? Signal high and clarity high. Use contrast, saturation, hue, lightness, opacity, shadow, size, shape, motion, animation, gradient, and proximity with intent and effectively, right? Once you do that, you know, nothing can stop you. So any questions on that? Any questions on the clarity? Yeah, go ahead. Right.
We're talking about contrast.
Sure.
You showed us a picture with rather less contrast.
Yes.
But people with problems with their eyes will hate you for
it. Exactly. So the question is, what about people who are visually impaired? Excellent question. And for that, what my recommendation is that you have an option in your application to go higher contrast, to adjust contrast, right? So instead of having, you know, thousands of options for all the individual colors, you have a simple slider. That just allows somebody to move it up, and they see immediately as they make the change the impact, so they can do the adjustment. make that easy to discover for visually impaired users somehow. You know, maybe, I'm not sure, you know, discoverability is a whole nother topic, right? How do you make something easy to discover? I'll show maybe a few examples today, you know, but there's a lot of ways you can make something easy to discover. But that's the recommendation I would have. I strongly recommend that. From my perspective, controls, like when you drop a label on the form, a text box on the form, they shouldn't have, you know, individual settings for color. And I'm okay with themes, right, and skins. But what I really want is a one single slider kind of option that adjusts contrast across the board for everything. And also, similarly, when I put the control down, the label on, I want to have a combo box that allows me to set what the relevance is on this. Is this highly relevant information, or is it not so high? And based on that, it picks its color from the theme or the skin, that sort of thing. Right? That's really what I want. I want a UI like that. I build it, and instead of saying me picking the color, which is crazy, I just say, here's how important this information is. And based on that, it just, everything works. Right? Grabs from the skin, everything. I can put a line on there and say, this is low information. This is a line, low information, you know, low contrast line. So when you change skin, whatever, it's still low contrast line. That is, to me, what, you know, that's kind of form design from the future. Okay. We can't fix the UI. So we're talking about some strategies for reducing the cost of interaction. Some of those are in key binding, mouse travel distance. We'll also talk about respecting and directing gaze, and we'll see how exciting this gets. So, this, you know, at the beginning I was talking about, you know, as application complexity increases, so do all the shortcuts. We saw the key binding shortcut printouts that were created to improve discoverability. So instead, what I recommend doing, instead of having individual commands and having a shortcut for each command, instead I want you to distill your commands into groups of contextually related commands. As an example, as developers, we declare things and we refactor things. You could create two different shortcuts. We also move places as well. So moving. So you can create a single shortcut for moving, and a single shortcut for declaring, and a single shortcut for refactoring. And then we can use context to decide what to show the user. If there's ambiguity, we can present a menu so they can resolve ambiguity. Right? So we use context to infer customer intent. Let me give you an example of that. It's kind of a, let's jump over here to Visual Studio. So here, for example, if I want to comment out this code, instead of hitting Control KC, I might be able to hit just a slash key, and then it'll comment it out. And another slash key will uncomment it out, right? That's an example of using context to infer what the slash key does. If I just hit him here and I want a slash key, I just hit the slash key, right? But because I have a multi-line selection on, I can do something differently. What's neat about this is it adds discoverability, at least in this world, right? In programming world, right? The slash key, or maybe not discoverability, but at the very least, it's effortless to remember that if you're a C-sharp developer. So something to consider. So, okay, mouse travel distance is next. So if you're going to support the mouse, minimize travel distance for common tasks. And these are exciting suggestions to me. I've been making these suggestions for about, I think, 7 years. And when I first started making them, a lot of people thought I was crazy because of the suggestions, not because of, you know, the other thing with the sheep and stuff. And so position UI elements closer to the mouse was one of my suggestions. So here's an example. This is an old screenshot from Visual Studio 2005, but here's what I want to do. I want to select all these, make sure they're aligned left. So I multi-select, then I move up, and I start trying to figure out which one of these buttons is aligned left. The one that's highlighted is aligned left. But the problem is that the important piece of information, the alignment bar, is the same level of contrast as the boxes that represent the controls, right? If we lowered the contrast of the boxes, it would be easy to see that this was aligned left, okay? But it's not. So I have to hover over it and look for that that says aligned left. So, okay. And then I click on it, and then I come back down here to do the next thing. So there's my mouse travel distance right there, plus one click. Instead, if we were to have this very close, in other words, I make a selection, and now around the selection, the buttons for manipulating the selection occur, right? I have two or more buttons selected, or two more controls. Now I've got a line left on the left, a line right, and a line middle. Oh my gosh, it's easy to figure out which ones these are. Once I figure them out, I know exactly where these buttons are, right? A line left is on the left. A line, you know, middle is here. A line right is here. A line top is here. A line bottom is here. Right? Plus, they're very, very close. I don't have to move all the way up to my toolbar and then back. As a result, doing this step is now significantly less. By the way, in the last section, we'll talk about what's the impact of that, measuring, you know, what is the value of that. So that's number one, move UI elements closer to the mouse. Controversial suggestion number two. If a click moves UI below it, so I've got some floating UI, I click it, boom, it moves. Then my suggestion is to move the mouse as well with it when you do the click, right? And I just so everybody hears that, I say, that's right, move the mouse programmatically. So examples, and I've got two of them here. Expanding the bottom node of a tree view. So look at this. So we enhance the tree view because we realize that if a customer were to click here to open this node up, what the default behavior is to just open up the children underneath it off screen, right? And so inevitably what would happen, somebody would happen when they're in this scenario is they'd click to open it, they'd move the mouse to the scroll bar, they'd scroll it down, and then if they saw that that wasn't what they wanted, then they'd click again to close it. Okay? So what we did instead is we moved the mouse. And so here's what it looks like. You click, it opens up, and because it opens, we're scrolling, so let's move the mouse with it. And then, then if we want to close it, you just click again, and it's closed. We did this. We did user testing on it. Nobody ever said, hey, you just moved something on me. Nobody ever said that, right? Compare it with the other one. Click, reach for the scroll bar, scroll down, oh, click again, right? Targeting and finding it. It's so much faster, so much easier. Okay? So, yeah, comment. Why is it on the bottom? Well, it was probably because I select. So the question is, why is it on the bottom of the list? There's obviously a controversy at hand here, some kind of subversion in the background. There's something serious. No, I don't know why I did this. I'm sorry, I said controversy. Conspiracy would have been funnier. That's what I meant to say. Okay, so why is it on the bottom? I probably clicked it before doing the screenshot. That's a possibility. So the question is, what about if I just click on it, scrolling it up? Well, it's not quite the same thing as opening up children, right? So I don't really know intent. So I'm not saying that you can't do that. I'm just saying I probably wouldn't do that because clicking and scrolling like that, you know, might be a little bit weird if somebody just wants to click on it just to highlight it. Okay? So that's my suggestion. Scroll the mouse if you move a piece underneath it. Let's give you another demo of that. Let's go into Visual Studio. And let's do, I think I have a big file in here. Oh, here it is. So let's bring up the Find dialog. We'll look for the letter A. And we'll click Find Next. Click Find Next, Find Next. So there, I found a few at the top. And now what happened? I clicked, oh, now I got to chase it. Click, oh, I got to chase it, right? And now I'm chasing it through the code, right? If it's blocking and I click on it, excuse me. If it's blocking and I click on it, we're going to get, it's going to move and I have to chase it with the mouse. Whoops. Oh, what did I, this is interesting. Oh, I changed, look for expand, I see. So something like that going on. All right. So that's inside of Visual Studio. Let's go into Word. Do the same thing. Search for the letter A. Find next. It moves it. Oh, man, my mouse. I got to go scroll up and go get it, right? Moves it out of the way. So what's going on? Well, we've got stack-based UI, right? And what it's trying to do is it's trying to respect, you know, the gaze, give you a chance to see that information. So instead of flattening it, it just moves it out of the way for you. The problem is I clicked the mouse and it moved it out of the way, right? And so it is now I have to chase it with the mouse. So I'm playing a game of chase. Let's look at Excel. Not that one, this one. Whoops. Okay, we're going to block. A, find next, find next. Look what's happening to the mouse.
Yeah.
It's not bad. Different team. Right? Notice the background, right? The lines. That's the same team that got the lines right. The Excel team is doing well. They would do well to talk to the other teams, right? So, yeah, I like the Excel team. So, well, one thing, this is funny. Watch this, okay? Block this. Give that focus. I'm going to just move the mouse up here. Watch the mouse. I'm going to hit enter, though. Enter, enter, enter. See the mouse moving? Okay, Excel team, talk to me, call me. Okay? So, what's going on? Well, you know, I remember there was a time when we were, you know, in event-driven programming where we were saying, hey, it doesn't matter if the click came from a mouse or keyboard. Well, now it finally matters, right? We finally now need to know, did that click come from a mouse or a keyboard, right? This whole thing is so decoupled. We just said, okay, it's a command, and the command is, you know, is just, it doesn't matter. It's just the find next command. It's coming in. Treat it just like, you know, independent of what it came from, right? So, and now we finally need to know, is it actually coming from a click? Because if it is, then we want to move it, otherwise we don't. So, anyway, that's kind of fun. So, all right, so let's go back to slides. Layered interactions. So, summary, watch for mouse travel issues on common tasks, especially involving large modal dialogues, right? You throw those dialogues up, people are like, you know, their eyes go to the top, they're moving down, they click OK, maybe another dialogue comes up, they have to go back up, right? There's a lot of stuff maybe going on there. So I watch for that and try to find ways to flatten all that down. Bring controls closer to the mouse. I love this idea. I think it's a great idea. And also move the mouse if a click moves the UI below it, right? That's my controversial, you know, suggestion that finally Excel team came and backed me up on that, right? Awesome. And this other one here, this last point, is bias to the mouse or keyboard if that makes sense. So if you know the customer's hands are on the keyboard, you know, this goes against a rule that we were often taught, which says you have to support keyboard and the mouse equally. And what I'm saying is you don't have to support them equally. If you know the customer's hands are likely to be on the mouse, you can bias for the mouse, make it a mouse-intensive experience, like on the form designer, for example. If you know the customer's hands are likely on the keyboard, you can bias for the keyboard. Invest time and effort making the keyboard experience quick and efficient. So any questions on that? How do I feel about test cases? Touch screens. So how do I feel about them? Well, so it's the same kind of thing, though, travel distance. Now, the touch screen I have most experience with is my phone. So I'm moving a small distance, so it's not too big of a deal, right? However, I've seen a couple places where I don't have any phone screenshots in here, but I think the most important, the biggest problem I've seen on the UIs for phone is with regards to size. So pieces that I want to hit frequently are the same size as pieces I want to hit infrequently. Right, and then proximity. The other thing I didn't talk about proximity is if you have a dangerous button like delete everything without undo right next to your save button, right? That you don't want them too close together, right? So how do I feel about touchscreens in general? It's the same kind of thing. You want to look for distance that you can reduce. How much? You know, am I moving too far? Can I shorten that up? That's what I think, you know, is one of the things you're looking for. And also make it easier so precision is not required, right? Anytime precision is required, it takes longer than expected to, like, you know, hit a button or get to the next step, that sort of thing. Consider making the button bigger, right? So, directing gaze. Well, our eyes are attracted to motion, size, contrast, texture, and depth, and to control focus. So if you want to direct gaze where the customer is looking, use animation, contrast, size, and again, I say don't overdo it. Use smallest effective difference. And effective combination is large size and low contrast. So we've seen that. And with regard to motion, I have kind of a cool demo here. Let's see. Here we go. So let's close this down. So one of the features I worked on, I needed to be able to draw people's eyes to a particular location. So, for example, if your eyes are up here, and I want to get your eyes down to the bottom, right, what I did is I created something that had this kind of locator beacon coming in on it, right? It's low contrast. Let's do it again. We'll show it. I'll bring my, you know, if your eyes are up here, your eyes up there, and then I hit escape to go collect it, and then you can see this kind of thing coming in. Right, and what's cool about that is that it a couple things. One is the motion gets your eyes in. The low contrast allows you to ignore it if you don't want to, and that's the thing. You can actually do experiments with this. You can make it incredibly high contrast, and it gets annoying very quickly. Right, if people are annoyed with your UI, try dropping the contrast down. Right, you probably are not. You're probably violating smallest effective difference, and the motion just brings your eyes in on there. So that's nice. And I just showed you that one. So for reducing brain power, eliminate obvious UI barriers. So the first steps are getting rid of modal dialogues. corded keys like Control KC, things like that, long mouse travel distances. So those are the big steps that will give you big gains initially. Then after that, you want to look at frictional forces, reducing customer emotion, hands and eyes, right? And I didn't talk about this, but one of the things that is a big issue for me is transitioning from keyboard to mouse. So my hands are on the keyboard, and I realize, oh, God, I don't know the shortcut for this. I'm going to grab the mouse and go up into the menu and click on the thing, right, because I don't know what it is. And so I only transition from one to the other if I have to. So now my hands are on the mouse, the dialog's up, I'm interacting with the mouse, I click OK, and now I've got to write code again, so I transition back. I consider a transition from one input medium to another as expensive. Okay, so I try to reduce that whenever possible. Okay, if we're talking about a UI and part of the UI is, well, you're going to reach for the mouse and then you're going to reach for the keyboard, I'm like, okay, this is expensive. Is there a way we can do it without that? Okay, so I consider that an expensive thing. Reuse keystrokes, so allow, you know, that's the idea of having one key do many things. And based on context, we decide what it's going to do. Okay. And then increase clarity. And then you want to exploit also opportunities to explain functionality. That's discoverability, right? If you write, and I'll show you a great example of this. So we select all of this, and we want to change the font. Well, let's do this font size. It'll probably be easier to see that. As I scroll down over these, I'm just moving the mouse. I haven't selected anything. You can see what's going to happen before you do it. I love this. It's beautiful. I call this preview hinting, and it really is a great discoverability technique. Imagine a menu that was very complex, you're not sure what it does. The preview hinting shows you what it's going to do, right? It's really, really great, great stuff. It's similar like undo and redo, right? When undo and redo first came out, there were like 8 levels of undo, and developers were all excited. On the box, it said 8 levels of undo, right? Which means you can try things and get back safely, is what it's saying. But there's still a cost in that, right? If we don't know what something's going to do, the cost of getting of first determining is it the right thing or not is expensive sometimes, right? If you see something that you don't, you know, a menu item, you just don't know what it says, you know, gobbledygook, you don't know what it means. Should I try it or not? There's a cost involved, right? And you weigh that in your head. You're like, okay, do I have time to determine if this is what I need or not? And then you hit undo. So you're not worried about not being able to undo. You're worried about understanding what it does. But now, instead, if I bring this up and I can see what the impact is immediately, right, it looks like it had a timeout on that. Let's bring it up again. There we go. Right? Whoops.
You broke it.
Yeah, I think I clicked. I moved out of it. Oh, interesting behavior.
Oh.
I don't know about that. Yeah. My email address for the folks on the Excel team is markm@devexpress.com. I'm teasing. Okay, so yeah, but yeah, in general, I really like that. I like it. Same thing here, where I can choose the different colors. You can see what the impact is going to be. So, orienteering. Show you this demo. This is kind of interesting. So let's go to the bottom. Let's see this get degrees. So let's focus our eyes down here on this get degrees block of code here. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to hit Control KK to drop a bookmark over on the left there. I'm going to go to the top of the file, and I'm going to pick it up by hitting Control KN. Now, the question is, are we where we expect it to be? Yeah, so no is the first answer, right, is no. And then the second answer is, oh, wait, yes, we are. But what's happened is the screen has moved up. It's scrolled up, right? So it's a little bit hard to determine are we at the right place or not. Let's contrast that. You remember where we were? Everybody remember where we were? Now contrast that and, you know, be aware of what's happening in your brain with this. Right? You instantly know we're right back where we were. Why? Because the perspective is the same. Right? So this idea of drilling into data coming back out, you want to restore the view when you come back out of where people were. You don't, in my opinion, want to bring it to the center of the screen, which is what the Visual Studio behavior is. Right? That view is actually really, really important for orienteering. Right? It's how I got back home when my parents dropped me off in the woods that one time. Right? So, go ahead. I'll answer that offline. So we'll talk about that later. All right, so discoverability. So I talked a little bit about discoverability. And actually, you know, let me see if I should. Yeah, I'll just go with that. We talked about it you saw it in Office, right? Office 2007 has discoverability, and above has that built in based on the preview hinting. That was the cool thing I wanted to show you there. So, benefits, get people to totally focus on task, increase productivity, relax, experience a positive emotional response ranging from satisfaction to euphoria. Okay? So any questions on this section, right? The orienteering or the discoverability? All right, so here's where we've been. UI subjective, UI can be measured. I'm not an artist. Guess what? You've just gotten a degree from the Mark Miller School of being an artist in 15 minutes, right? We can't fix the UI. Well, we actually can. We can do things to fix the UI, right? The last one. Good UI is not worth the effort. So, how much does a click cost? If we want to save somebody the price of a click. Well, we have this formula, and it goes like this. You take the time wasted. So, let's say a click is 2 seconds. The repetition. How many times per hour? 3 times. N, the number of users, 300. S, the average salary of the users, $40,000. Solve for the C, the productivity cost. So just multiply these across each other. As an example, here let's go over into Excel. Is this it? Nope. Cost of click. Here it is. So here's the formula. Those are the values. Annual productivity cost, $20,000 US, equivalent to about almost 3 months for a single developer. That's one click wasted every three times an hour with 300 users. At that salary range, right? So it's a way to measure productivity loss. Now, a while back, my dad was in the hospital. I visited, and one of the things that was remarkable is at the time, the hospital was changing over to a new system. Before I got there, the week before I got there, there was a clipboard at everybody's foot of everybody's bed. Doctors would pick up the clipboard. There are a lot of items on the clipboard, but they would just go boom, 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 and then put it down. Now I was watching doctors visiting the room, getting in front of the computer, and grumbling. They were angry, and they would spend minutes. And I was like, what's going on? And they said, well, look, this is our new system, and take a look at it. And first thing that happened is, you know, they move up to the top, modal dialogue comes up. They start moving through the modal dialogue. It has so many controls and options on it, because it had to duplicate what was on the clipboard, that there's a scroll bar on the side to scroll up more controls. So they're filling it out, they're grabbing the scroll bar, moving it down, filling it out, grabbing the scroll bar, moving it down, filling it out, and many of these forms, many of the controls are being left untouched, right? The controls, text boxes are just totally empty. They're just finding the right ones, they're reaching for the mouse, clicking on the control they want to make change, going back to the keyboard, right? So with that hospital, I was estimating about 3 minutes were wasted. About 5 times an hour. Number of users, about 300. 300 doctors and nurses in the hospital. Average yearly salary, I was saying about $95,000 US was my estimate on that. Annual productivity cost, $7 million US. That's 80 dev years for certain person, one man or woman working for 80 years. So what do you want to do? You want to pull the software back, give everybody clipboards, give the developers a week or two or three to fix it, because you're losing so much money. Not to mention, you know, doctors and nurses saying, I want to get a job somewhere else, right? Because this sucks. So how much does it cost? It can be huge, right? That can be the huge cost. Another thing, take a look at lost market share if your competitors come out with a better version than yours, okay? I don't think we have to think, you know, look too far back in history to think of examples where dominant market leaders were shut down by other products that came along with a better UI, right? And then we're forced to spend like $500 million and, you know, another $200 million maybe in development costs, or maybe $100 million in development costs, maybe less, I don't know, to come up with a better version to match it, right? It can be incredibly expensive if your competition comes out with a much better version than yours, right? So, all right, so let's go back over to the slide, and I contend that a great user experience is worth the effort. All right? So with that, I wanted to put up the last slide, and I just want to take any questions that you have. Anything at all we can talk about. Yeah, go ahead.
These are all static design stuff, and apart from the emotions things, but there's also the information itself. Do you have any suggestions for that?
So the
like a learning UI, how you get to that?
So, okay, so the question, so when you say learning UI, do you mean a UI that teaches the customer how to use the product, or?
It's learning from the customer what he wants.
What he wants. So UI that's learning from the customer what he wants. So how do I get to that? Yeah, so I haven't really given that much thought. I'm like, my first gut response is, I don't know. I need, like, more of what you're trying to get, right? I will say that one of the cool technologies that's out is machine learning. Right? And so with machine learning, we can take a variety of inputs and get a sense of what be predictive about what a customer wants. Right? As an example, you might be watching, like, for example, a slider. Right? So when I open up a particular document or a particular view, the customer grabs the slider and moves down. Right? So you might see that and you might say, okay, let's move the slider down when this view is up instead. Be predictive about that. So there's an example. But I think this is it's tricky. I think this is an area where there's not much research has been done, and it's the kind of thing where you have to look at each thing that you're thinking about and do it a bit at a time. So we're using machine learning and some of our future stuff that we're working on. And it's with regards to naming things, right? Because we want to see, based on what's here, what you're likely predict. We want to predict what you're likely to name it. And so we try to, and the benefit is, if we can come up with a good name, we save you from having to type it in. So there is predictive things that you can do, and machine learning is the key to that. Right? Okay, any other questions? Yeah?
Do you think of Kinect in business applications?
Do I think of Kinect in business applications? Not the current version. However, the next version, yes. So Kinect, when I say the next version, a version with higher resolution and more smarts on board. Right? Which allows me to have a... Because right now the Kinect can give me a skeleton that ends at the wrist. Right, so I can't see fingers, and there's nothing built into it yet that I'm aware of that does emotional state recognition, or even be able to say, okay, where's the eyebrow, that sort of thing, right? But given a higher resolution camera, more smarts on board, we now start getting my fingers, reading my emotional state, and on top of that, the killer, in my opinion, is being able to do gaze tracking, right? See where I'm looking on screen with a degree of precision to 1 degree or less, right? So now if you know where I'm looking, I can say, delete that. Boom, it's gone, right? I now can give context to voice recognition, which voice recognition really needs context, right? How many times you try something and they say, no, I meant delete that. No, no. Like, I don't know if you're like me on the phone, I've got voice recognition. I start swearing at the voice recognition system, right? No, you idiot, that's not what I said. Well, sorry, did you say representative? No. No, not representative. I'm going to get a representative. No. So yeah, voice recognition needs context. And with Kinect, you can get that context. So yeah, I think there's a possibility. We really need a really high-resolution camera, though, to be able to see where the eyes are, and some really strong software to be able to really tell what you're looking at. And that, I think, is cool, potentially, like very, very cool. But then we go back to this thing, you know, am I going to spend the whole day doing this? I don't know. You know, when I see people do demos that are controlled by the hands, right, they're not up like this, like you imagine you would be sitting at a desk. They're standing up, and their hands are down here. Right, the really effective demos, they're like this. They're like, you know, doing stuff like this and moving, right? So it's an interesting possibilities are out there. Gaze tracking, I'm a huge fan of. I want to see gaze tracking in the operating system, you know, built into the operating system. Where is the customer looking? I totally want that just to be built in, just like, you know, support for mouse. Any other questions? Yeah. Oh, that's an interesting question. So the things that I presented, is it global or are there cultural differences? I would say that with color, there might be cultural differences. For example, in some countries, green can mean that you failed a class or something along those lines, if I'm recalling correctly. So there are potentially some cultural differences. But by and large, the answer is these are global, right? The reason information in parallel works, right, moving back and forth, is because we're used to coming out of the, you know, the hut or the tent and scanning for enemies or prey, right? What are we going to go hunt, or what's going about to hunt us down, right? We're very good at that, right? We're used to being dropped off in the middle of the woods and finding our way home, or maybe that's just me, right? So, but it's the idea of walking, you know, recognizing, oh, I've been here before, and finding my way back, right? And that's why restoring the view is important. Right? Our eyes are attracted to motion, right? That's a survival thing. That affects anybody, everybody. So yes, I would contend that the vast majority of what you're seeing today is universal, globally universal for human beings, and probably a lot of animals as well. So if you're writing software for creatures, these things will probably work there too. All right? We have about 5 minutes left. Any other questions? Yes. So the question is what to put up, right? What controls to use? Interesting. Okay, so from this perspective, I guess I would say, so the question is how do I know what controls to use? Should I use, combo boxes, list boxes, a list, a tree view, these kinds of things, right? And I think what you have to do to answer that question is I think it's a great question. So I think first what the team has to do is establish a criteria for determining the winner. Right? And that criteria might be clarity of presentation. It might be the least amount of physical interaction. Or it might be a combination. Okay? So we say, first of all, we agree. What are we going to agree? What are we going to use to make our decisions? And that's the first step. Get everybody on the team, to agree. We want it to be the most efficient UI possible. The second step is to try something. Right? The third step is, once you get it, is to then, if you have an idea for something different, is to compare and actually use the metrics. How many keystrokes? How much mouse distance is moved? And then make a decision based on those. And what you can do is you can refine your approach as new controls come out, right? I'm always wary of using a tree view because they're great for showing, it's a natural inclination to use them for hierarchical data, right? They're pretty mouse-centric, right? I have to reach my mouse, find, target that small little plus sign, click it, open it up, and then keep going to drill in, right? They're typically navigated using the mouse. So I always, when somebody says, should we use a tree list, I'm always like, oh God, do we have to? Can we do it some other way? Because I know of this inherent cost involved with interaction, right? In fact, somebody was coming to me, a couple months ago, and they said, well, I have everything in a tree view, and I said, well, how many levels deep does it go? And he said, one. Right? It was one child deep. And I said, okay, so let's just have a list. And instead you click the list and boom, something else comes up of the possible choices. Because he doesn't need, the tree view allows you to see multiple children at once, but he did not have that constraint. He didn't need that. He just, you click one, now you can see the next set of choices. Right? Remember the hospital form with all those controls? Well, let's start filling out one, and then as we know what the diagnosis is, let's start removing things that don't apply. Right? Get rid of it so they don't have to scroll down. Right? So when I do this, and the question is, what do I choose? I'll pick a control, and then I'll ask, is this good enough? Or can I envision this a shorter way of doing this? And if I can, I'll either create the control myself, something brand new from scratch, or I will, sometimes I'll spec something out, like the scroll bar just came to mind, right? Oh my gosh, we really need the way to, we need something to set a marker here, right? Mark this position, snapshot it, stack them up. I'm going to keep going and looking, oh, let's look here. Let's get me through my snapshots of the position in the scroll, I'll invent something new that doesn't exist, maybe. Okay, other questions? We have about 2 minutes. Yes?
You always have the issue that users are used to what they do.
Right. Yes.
For example, you said before that we use scroll bars, and that's like the year already.
Yeah.
Google Wave tried new scroll bars, and it totally failed because users couldn't use it.
Yes. So where do I stand on that? Is that kind of where you're getting to, is your question? What do I have to say about that?
It's always hard to change something.
Yes. So the comment is, it's hard to vary from the user model, what the user expects, right? And so you have to weigh that. Right? As an example, let me show you a great example of varying from the user model. So I installed Office 2007 a couple years ago. And I started creating documents. And I was like, where is the save button? Oh my God, where is the save button? And I was working for, print. I was like, where is the print? I would need to print. Ugh. All right, so let's keep creating documents. And 3 days passed. And during the 3 days, this circle was glowing, flashing. I was swearing, what the idiot made that thing glow? What are they doing? What is the purpose? 3 days after installing, I finally put the mouse over it and it said, oh, click here. if you want to print, you know, or save or whatever, those kinds of things, right? So here we have discoverability, right? But they varied from the user model. They changed. And they I believe what happened, I'm not on the team, I don't know anything what happened, you know, what happened, but I believe what happened is they realized they needed discoverability. So somebody said, let's make it glow, right? And then everybody's like, yeah, if it glows, everybody will move their mouse over it. Nobody would be dumb enough to work for days without moving their mouse over it, right?
And
so the point is, if you vary from the user model, there has to be a good reason to do it, right? It's going to be more efficient. Secondarily, you need to provide discoverability. In fact, this is a huge point, right? If you were in the, you know, your design meeting and you're saying, this is going to be the awesome UI, it's going to be very efficient, all of this stuff, right? Often, you don't realize that you have a discoverability problem until it's built and you get it to users. And discoverability is often an expensive problem to solve. Preview hinting is not an easy thing to write, right? Flashing the button is an easy thing to write, right? So what happened, I think, in Office is they got to the last minute and they realized they had a discoverability problem and they came up with a short, quick solution. But the valuable point to take away from this is when you're in that meeting, you're coming up with something, you recognize that we're varying from the user model, you say to everybody, there's going to be a discoverability problem, we have to solve this now in planning because it's going to be a better solution now than it later. And with that, we're out of time. Thank you very much.